I'm scared. Oh my. Do what? I ain't scared. I'm Wendell. We ready for the podcast? Okay. I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God. I'm realizing what that means a little bit more every day. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. And I've also had issues with pornography, with alcohol, with rage and panic and depression. Yeah, we're on a three-part series about listening. And if you've missed some of them, they're hopefully on the podcast on the website, the Broadway website. Sometimes there's a week or two delay on those, but they eventually get them up there. But this is a three-part series on listening. And what we've realized as we've progressed in Pathway, we all learn together, and my lessons come from you more than anywhere. I just listen. I listen in group. I listen in conversations. And as we've grown and deepened and widened as a group in our understanding and our wisdom, we found something several years ago that we really latched hold of, and that is love the person in front of you. And it made a lot of sense, and it sounded really righteous. And a lot of people grabbed it, and then, you know, after two or three months, it was like, but what does that look like? You know, sounds really, really good, but how do we do that? How does that play out in real life? And so we've talked about that, and we've wondered and pondered and conversed and dug and pondered more about that. And we've kind of come up with some ideas that to love the person in front of you means to see them and to hear them, to be fully invested in them enough to see who they are and hear their heartbeat, not just hear the information that's coming out of their mouth, but hear what's going on in their heart. Who do they love? What do they value? What is their backstory? What are their fears? What are their misgivings in life? What's going on in here? And so we've been talking about that's how you love the person in front of you. You listen to them. You see them. You invest yourself in them. There's a certain degree of vulnerability that goes with this. If you're in a hurry, you can't do that. If you're preoccupied, it's really challenging to do that. So you have to make yourself, allow yourself to become vulnerable, to invest the time to listen to that person, to realize this is going to take a chunk out of my life and a chunk out of my time and a chunk out of my energy, but I gladly give it. But that chunk that gets taken causes you to be vulnerable. And so it's not something that you just skip and whistle into. It's something you have to, you know, do I want to do this? Do I want to do this? And to be honest, the last couple weeks here at work have been dead. Everybody's gone in the summertime. You come in the building here and, you know, even my best friend Wayne, I can't find him anywhere, you know. Oh, he's praying. On one innocent soul. Oh, P-R-A-Y. Sorry. I thought you meant P-R-E-Y-ing. Okay. Yeah, sorry. So I've kind of, so there have been some days when I've thought, well, shoot, if nobody else is there, I'm not going in. So I've just stayed at home and done my work at home, got a lot of work done. But I found myself as I kind of isolated away from people. I didn't like what was happening inside me. I was kind of closing in to myself. And we don't have groups going right now. We don't have midweek groups going. We don't have a staff step group going right now. And I found myself just kind of crawling back into my cave. Scared me to death. I'm telling you. It scared me. I thought, I don't want to go back there. I never want to go back to that isolation, that cave-dwelling life. To invest myself in other people hopefully gives them life. Could you give me something to drink? Hopefully gives them life, but also, is that coffee?
This is my wife. I can drink after.
It's okay. Thank you very much. She takes good care of me, by the way. So I'm realizing that investing myself in other people not only gives them life, it also gives me life. And when I stop doing that, I find myself changing in ways I don't like. So I think it would be selfish to say, I'm going to listen to you so I'll feel better about myself. I'm not feeling real good about that. But I realize that when you invest in somebody, there is a grace energy that affects them, but it also affects you in that encounter. So we're talking about listening. And tonight we want to talk about the greatest gift that we can give somebody is to listen to them and to see them. That's the greatest gift. It's no amount of money. It's not things. It's not, you know, a promotion. It's not whatever. To really, because I think that we're all born with this innate need to be seen and heard. Think about your little kids. Think about little children. And think about them wanting you to see every little thing they draw, every little thing they make. If they make up a song, they want you to hear it. It could be way out of tune. Maybe it doesn't rhyme. Doesn't matter. They want you to hear it. If they learn a new trick, look how high I can jump. Look how fast I can run. I can ride my bike without my training wheels now. You know, all the little things that they do, it's so essential that people they know who love them or supposed to love them see them and hear them and see into their and know them. And when they're hurting or when they're confused or when they're angry or when they're whatever, some of the emotions that my children had, I shut them down. I think, oh, I wish I could go back and do that over again. I wish I could go back and say, tell me how you're feeling. Tell me, because I thought they were being rebellious, and they weren't. They were just expressing their emotions, and I shut them down, thinking I was being a good father. I've gone back and make amends. They don't want me to do it anymore. They're tired of it. But the greatest gift that we can give to somebody is to see them and hear them, and it's not just an adult thing. It's a human thing that starts from day one. And so when we grow up and we feel like we're not seen and we feel like we're not heard, or what's even worse is when we know that we're being misunderstood and the way they're interpreting us is exactly the way I misinterpreted my kids. I thought it was rebellion. I thought it was whatever. And so it was something to be punished instead of something to be heard and seen. If we grow up and we get punished every time we try to get real, or anytime we try to share anything that's on our heart, we're never heard and we're never seen. You know, you hear where this is going. I mean, in a ministry like this, you grow up with these aching, screaming, crying needs to be seen and heard. I've got to have somebody tell me I'm good. Tell me I colored a good picture of a bunny rabbit. You know, it all goes back to that. It all goes back to, I did the very best I could do, and nobody noticed, and nobody cared, and nobody said good job. And so now I am busting my butt. I'm doing everything I can to be nice to people, to be good to people, and nobody notices. Nobody's saying anything. Nobody's seeing me. Nobody's hearing me. Who has not been there? That's just in this little room right here. Take this out into the world. This is where everybody lives. Everybody lives, won't you? You remember the old Who opera, Tommy? You know, see me, hear me. Do you remember that? Yeah. That's the cry of the human heart. See me, hear me, please. So everybody is born with this need. And it's, when it's not met, we grow up craving it. And I think there are a few, I've met a few, who seem to be just natural listeners. And I have to think they must have been listened to when they were kids. They must have been paid attention to when they were kids. So they don't have this craving need to be heard and seen. So they become very good listeners in life. Do you know the good listeners in your life? You could name them on less than one hand, can't you? People aren't, we're not good listeners, you know, because we're all wanting to be heard and seen. So the world is almost void of really good listeners. those of us who are better at listening than we used to be, that's not an accident. We've had to intentionally press into that, right? I mean, it's sad to say that we have to learn to be good seers and good hearers, but we do. We do, we have to. So, well, the point is pretty simple. We rarely listen to others if we've never been heard. Not naturally, anyway. Not naturally. We have to make a decision to learn how to listen. There's a quote that Lewis, we had him find last week, and it's essentially that being heard feels the same as being loved. And it's just so true. Does God hear me? Does the person in front of me hear me? Does my wife hear me? Does my husband hear me? Does my mommy hear me? Does my daddy hear me? Does my boss hear me? Does my neighbor hear me? You know, the people I care about in life, do they know who I am? Do you work with people and you say, I've worked with them 10 or 15 years? I really don't know them, and they don't know me. You have neighbors you've lived next to 25, 30 years, and you think, I don't really know them. They don't really know me. This is not a healthy world for us not to know each other, for us not to hear and listen to each other. Well, let's not bemoan that, okay? Let's not spend that, because we could spend a lot of time talking about the woes of the world and how a lot of them can be attributed to the fact that nobody sees or hears each other. Let's just pause at that. I'm not going to elaborate, but just think about that. Many of the woes of this world are caused by people not hearing each other and people not seeing each other. Let's go the other way. Let's go the positive way. So when we do see and we do hear, there's this weird grace. And what we do on Sunday night is podcast, but there's also another podcast that Wayne and Jason Brown and I are doing called On Grace. And we're digging into grace. And we're trying to dig into what does grace look like, not just in a conceptual way, but in a very practical way. How's it lived out? What's it look like? What's it feel like? How do you live in grace? And we're kind of discovering, as if we're smart enough to discover anything, but among the three of us, you know, we're hunting for acorns, and all three of us are blind, and we find one every now and then. We'll find a special little nugget there. But we're kind of coming to the conclusion that there's a certain energy involved in grace, that when I listen to you and you listen to me and we interact on this deeper level, there's an energy that develops between us, and it's the power of grace. And every conversation has this potential. I think this is why we're missing out, is we think, I've got a circle of people in my life who I will take the time to listen to. I've decided who that circle is. I could list them on a piece of paper. And I've decided who this circle is, and I will give them my attention. Everybody else, no. They get the leftovers. They get the crumbs. The sacred, special moments in my life are with the people on my list. Sometimes we pick convenient people. Sometimes we pick people based on blood relationships. Sometimes we pick people based on what they can do for us. They can be a promotion. They can feather my cap. They can further my career. But I lived life with a list. Do y'all know what I'm talking about? It's a terrible admission to make. I'll just admit it. I don't make you admit that. But I lived life with a list. And that list was just certain people that I thought, these people are worthy of my full attention. I want to hear them. I want to see them. Everybody else, not so much, you know. And what would happen if we put, this sounds preposterous, what if the only qualification that's needed to be on that list is, are you a human being? That's the only qualification. We don't have to be blood kin. You don't have to, I don't have to work with you. You don't have to be a lifelong friend. Are you a human being? If you're a human being, I want to know you. If you're a human being, I want to see you. If you're a human being, I want to respect the God who is already in you. I want to respect what he's doing in you. I want to respect the beauty, the wonder, the profound wisdom that's in you. It's in there. I know it's in there. That makes every conversation sacred. It makes every human encounter. It just blows it up with potential. You don't know where it's going to go. But when you give it a chance to be sacred, how many times, I'm just going to drop off here and get this. I'm going to deal with one or two humans, but the aim is just to drop off and get this and head home and deal with the humans I really care about. These are inconsequential humans. Do you like the sound of that? These are inconsequential humans. Why don't we just go put a label on them? You are inconsequential. You are inconsequential. Thank you very much. You're about the fifth person today that's made me feel that way. So we have to drop by and do this with a couple inconsequential humans so we can go home and be with the consequential ones, the real ones. But what would happen if all of those encounters became sacred encounters? How are you doing today? No, really, how are you doing? If they're willing to tell you. How's it going today? So we see all these as potentially sacred moments. Let's just backtrack a little bit. I spent most of my life, this going way back, I spent most of my life thinking that if you made up a really good set of rules and you enforced them and you did everything you could to keep them, that you would become a better person. Rules are what make you a better person. Legalism is what makes you a better person. Is anybody a better person in here today because they faithfully have kept rules? I certainly failed grievously at that. Rules just made me feel worse about myself, and rules destroyed my self-esteem and my peace and my joy. I know we need rules. I mean, driving home, it's pretty good to stay on the right side of the road and stop at, you know, red signs to say stop and stuff like that. But just to live your life thinking, if I keep all the rules, this will make me a better person. So what we need to do is, during those encounters with people, is just tell them the rules, right? The reason your life is so sorry is because you're not keeping the rules. So let me help you here. I'm here to love on you with some rules. You know, here, open up your sack and let me put a few more rocks in it and you can drag it home. So I lived most of my life that way. Well, I also lived most of my life thinking that knowledge would make me a better person. The more I know, the better I get. So I'll study my butt off. I'll study. You know, I'm going to improve my mind. I'm going to expand my wealth of knowledge. And naturally, my heart will just soften and become generous and kind. And didn't work at all. And I studied the Bible, you know, the sacred book. I studied it over, and I'm not belittling Scripture. I'm just saying I picked what I thought was the best book in the world, and I studied and I studied and I studied and I memorized and I studied more and I got deeper and deeper and deeper, and there was no heart change. I was still a selfish, you know what? I was hypocritical. I was angry. You name it. It's when I came to Celebrate Recovery and I sat in a room and I started to tell my story and people heard me and people saw me and people started to know me. And it wasn't just me, but everybody in the room started to tell their story and everybody listened and everybody saw. And everybody loved and accepted. And over time, we've become pathway. But the same thing still holds true. What changes a heart of a person is not keeping the rules, and it's not more knowledge. What changes and transforms the heart of a person is to be seen and to be heard. That's what brings this transformation. Most people think, if you really see me and you really hear me, you will hate me. Most of the world lives that way. They come to Pathway and they say, why doesn't that rule apply here? Well, because we think that rule sucks. You know, basically. This is the place where you can become, you can be real, and you will be loved for being real. And I've shared this story before, but one of the first, this was my test of Celebrate Recovery. I was just getting to know Larry and Sally. We were just moved to Bowling Green, and they started Celebrate Recovery, and I really liked them, but I thought, well, that doesn't mean the whole group's like this, you know. And so Larry's up there leading, and they're doing tokens, and it's, I don't know, about five or six times in, and a lady I had noticed who had been kind of a leader person in Celebrate Recovery comes on a Sunday night. She comes up to get a token, and it's a desire token. It's the very first one. It's not 30 days, 60 days, 12 years, whatever. It's a desire token. And she broke down, and she said, I've got to tell you, this last weekend, I absolutely fell off the wagon. I don't know why I did it, but I went to the liquor store, and I bought a fifth of vodka, and I just got smashed. And she had years of sobriety. And I thought, okay, now I'm going to see what this group is made of. You know, I know what's going to happen now. I couldn't believe it. People clapped, people hugged, people loved all over her. And I thought, shoot, what have I got myself into here? I thought, this is not what I expected. This is, because my whole history in any kind of religious organization, that kind of thing was ostracized. Oh, you're going on probation. You know, now that you've confessed in front of people, you're going to have to do some sort of penance. We're going to have to put you on some sort of system to where, you know, you can't be a leader anymore, or you can't be this, you can't be that. But instead, people said, you have been so honest and so real with your stuff, and you've let us into the real you. You've opened up and let us into the real you. Wow, this is what we value here. This kind of honesty is what we value. And we don't disrespect you for what you've done. We respect you for being honest. And you're honored for that. So rules don't change people. Knowledge doesn't change people. But we have a chance, because of what we have discovered here in Pathway, we have a chance of going out into a world and saying, I see you, I hear you. Almost like a miniature 12-step group out there. And I think especially with the inconsequential people. The guy who picks up your garbage. You know, think about that. The person who waits on you in a restaurant. The people who nobody else cares about. These are the people Jesus came for. These are the people who Jesus hung out with. The people that know the least of these. These are the ones. And you listen to them and you give them value. And watch what happens. Watch what happens. My mind goes crazy sometimes, and I want to ask the question, what if we just turn this loose and let it fly? What if we just said, yeah, this is going to be embarrassing. Yeah, this is going to be awkward. Yeah, this is not what I usually do, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know? I'm just going to go ahead and go for it, and I'm going to feel embarrassed because I don't know what to say and I don't know what to do. But guess what? When you listen, you don't have to say a whole lot. You know? You just ask a few questions, get them rolling, and then you just sit and listen. But what would happen if we just turned this loose, the multiplied and multiplied sacred conversations? That's not fair to ask. Don't raise your hand. I'll close my eyes. Don't raise your hand. Is anybody here waiting for some sort of earth-shaking thing to happen in their life? I live most of my life saying, I'm waiting on my spiritual ship to come in. I'm waiting on God to just give me some sort of lightning bolt, kind of like Pentecost, you know. boom, and my life is all different, you know? Some kind of miraculous change in my life. And I live most of my life waiting on something big, monumental like that to happen. And now I'm realizing that every conversation I have with somebody is that moment. It's that moment. I don't have to sit around and wait for some kind of angel visitation or kind of miraculous this or that. That every day I can involve myself in what God is doing in the world by listening and seeing other people. So, what are we going to do? We're going to love on the person in front of us. So what does that look like? You listen and you see. It's not that hard. We can do this. If you want to bring this back around to a 12-step model, you know, this would be working our 12th step. That's what we're doing. We're working the 12th step. And you know what? We used to talk about this way back in the early days of Celebrate Recovery, and it's always kind of been like a fly in the ointment. We really are big on all the steps, but we really don't know what the 12th step looks like. Maybe this is it. Maybe working the 12th step is this: listening and watching. Just to let people show us who they are. All right, we got one more song we're going to do.